So, folks, Norman Solomon is in the house. Let's hear it for him. Norman Solomon is a resident of Marin County. In addition to being an American journalist, media critic, anti-war activist, and former U.S. congressional candidate for California's 2nd District, he was recently elected as a pledged Bernie Sanders delegate to the 2016 DNC. Yay! Thank you for your service there, Norman. In 1997, Norman founded the Institute for Public Accuracy, the IPA, a consortium of policy researchers and analysts, which work to provide alternative sources for journalists and encourages mainstream media to interview progressive scholars and policy analysts. Norman Solomon served as IPA's executive director for 13 years and continues now as the coordinator of its Exposed Facts Project. You want to look that up online, an organization aimed at encouraging corporate whistleblowers in regard to human rights, corporate malfeasance, the environment, civil liberties, and war. He's the co-founder and coordinator of the online organization RootsAction.org, which has 750,000 active supporters. Yay! It's dedicated to galvanizing people who are committed to economic fairness, equal rights, civil liberties, environmental protection, and defunding endless wars, something we've been working on for decades. Mr. Solomon is a longtime associate of the National Media Watch Group, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, FAIR, which we've all followed for decades as well. They've been exposing well-documented criticism of media bias and censorship since 1986. He's a former associate for the Center for Investigative Reporting. In the summer of 2015, he became a member of the Courage Foundation Advisory Board. His weekly column, Media Beat, was a national syndication from 1992 to 2009. He's written a dozen books since 1982. His documentary, War Made Easy, was released in 2007. And it just goes on and on and on. He's appeared as a guest on numerous media outlets, including PBS NewsHour, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News Channel. Sorry I had to put up with that. C-SPAN, Public Radio Marketplace, which, by the way, you know, Marketplace is funded by the Koch Foundation. I heard that on an advertisement the other day. All Things Considered, Morning Edition, and Talk of the Nation. Norman Solomon was also here at St. John's in 2014 with Daniel Ellsberg, Saeed Batar, Robert Jaffe, Cindy Cohen for the NSA surveillance and our almost Orwellian state, which is a great event here at St. John's, produced by the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. That filled the sanctuary just like you fill this event tonight. You notice the numbers are up? I think we can count on that for the next 4 years. We're so very pleased to present Norman Solomon. Norman, come on up here. You're the one these good folks came to see. Give him a great round of applause.
Driving over here tonight, thinking about the full moon that was very much in evidence, when, of course, the astronauts went to the moon, we're told, and saw the Earth, it was a transcendental moment. And we're certainly seeking a lot of transcendental moments with positive feedback. I'd like to start by talking about community. And is anybody else getting an echo? I'm getting an echo.
How's that? I think that's better for me. I'd like to start by talking about community. We often hear an adjective before the word community. The adjective before the word refers to ethnicity, race, gender, sexual orientation, religion. But that is broad brush to the point of obscuring often the fact that within those categories that are all so facile, the word community barely applies quite often, or at least there's discord, not only positive diversity, but actual divergence with negativity. And so I think that word community could be unpacked a bit from an intellectual, emotional, spiritual standpoint. And maybe we could look at the word community as well as a verb. That making community possible is something that we do to make it authentic, rather than superficial, rather than simply labeling each other and our collective entities real or imagined. I think that because in this time, maybe more than in any of our lifetimes, this week we're going to be called upon, if we have our feet on the ground, looking at the future, to find better ways to engage in what might be called resistance. As I remember, Dietrich Bonhoeffer said that resistance is not really possible without community. Not the facile kind, not the kind that has an adjective filling in the blank before it, but community that's required, small scale, maybe large scale, based on real connection with each other and endeavoring together to sustain ourselves within difficult times, engaging in challenging and daunting activities. To look at, in any time of our lifetimes, the warfare state has always been challenging, has always been daunting unless we bypass it, dodge it, avoid it, engage in denial. So in a sense, I think that imperative for more authentic community to sustain resistance has always been with us. At the same time, we now have on the near horizon a government, executive branch, a legislative branch, foreseeably much of the judicial branch, based on hatred, based on bigotry, based on racism and misogyny and manipulation. And that is, as much as we would like to avoid it, our historic moment. And yet we know that so many people in so many walks of lives, in so many countries, in so many eras have been faced with equally and often more daunting obstacles. We know of people we admire, and today when we think of them no longer with us, we say, presente. We know their names, but perhaps the most admirable are the people whose names we don't know, who labored in obscurity, or what we're encouraged to believe is obscurity. And our possibilities now, I think, rest with, if you will, those people. Not the few, not the whose names we know, but the hundreds of thousands and millions, hopefully even into the tens of millions of people in our country that are going to be encouraged and nurtured and engaged in an authentic process, process being so important, of community, to build resistance, to say that those in power may be exercising that power from the top down, but that we have, if you will, a faith and a confidence based on experience that from the bottom up, that we can make history go in a better direction. I think of the John Berger film, as I remember the title, it's called Jonah Will Be 25 in the Year 2000. I think I saw it when 2000 seemed like, you know, incredibly a long time away. And in there, someone said, as I remember, men want history to go as fast as their lives. We have hopes. We want to see our hopes fulfilled in our lifetimes. And yet, sometimes that just ain't gonna happen, right? But we still persevere. I think it's the poet W.S. Merwin who said that in his last day he would like to plant a tree. And work for peace and social justice is always finding those seedlings and moving forward. A few weeks ago, I was at the Hancock Air Base just outside of Syracuse, and I saw the Continental Airlines planes come down to the runway. I saw the JetBlue planes. I saw the United Airlines planes. And I saw the Reaper drones. And they were all flying the same pattern. And that literally and figuratively represents the integration of militarism into our lives. As we can walk the campus, the beautiful campus of the University of California at Berkeley, that is so much integrated into planning for the extermination of the planet, and yet it's all normalized. And as we know, but need to keep reminding ourselves and fortifying ourselves by building authentic community, whether it's 2 people or 2,000 or the many thousands who circled Lake Merritt today, that we don't have to accept this, that we must not accept it, that we must find better ways to resist. I guess I don't even know what faith is anymore. There are many, of course, ways to perceive it and so forth. I thought today about the story of A.J. Mustie, who refused to go along with the air raid drills in the 1950s, the mythology that we would survive nuclear weapons. And of course, he also, as I remember, jumped over the fence at Nevada, as many have since, the Nevada test site. And he was asked at one point, "Do you really think you're going to change anything by doing this?" And he said, "Well, maybe not, but if I don't, then I will be changed." And he was very much implying, I think, change for the worst. Passivity in the face of the military-industrial complex, in the face of what Dr. King called the madness of militarism. Passivity implodes on us. You know, we've all heard people say, "Oh, it's too depressing to look at the news. It's too depressing to get engaged in politics." And yet, I think the experience of many people, including me, is it's too depressing not to.
Yeah, yeah.
Because to be passive is to stuff our worries, our concerns, our rage, our pain. It's to let the system of oppressions implode inside us. And so activism, among its many other virtues, is, you know, the potential to, pardon the expression, be therapeutic, and you don't even have to plunk down $100 an hour or pull out your insurance card. Right? Not lucrative for the health nets of the world, but part of what we know sustains us. And I was thinking in this room, there's probably into the thousands of years aggregate of activism in this one room. And as bad as we might say things are, imagine if activism had not taken place from people in this room, from people around this country and the world, what kind of shape our country and our world would be in. I certainly want to acknowledge a great deal of discouragement in the last several days, and there's certainly a basis for that. And in the face of the monumental tasks, we do the work of ants, A-N-T-S. Every day at our best, we get up and we move one something in some direction, we hope, in a constructive direction. But we know ants can get a lot done, especially in collective activities. Our training is the Lone Ranger comes along, the great leader comes along. That's the way history's taught. But we know that's not how things get done. Yes, we need, if you will, great leaders, but we've got to get the active. We need a culture that sustains us, and we need to sustain a culture that affirms life and resists the culture of death, which is there woven into the political economy of our country and the world. Politically, I think that we're told that it's an ill wind that blows no good, and I'm so reticent to try to find any silver lining in this cloud that has descended on us, so I don't want to be misunderstood, at least all by myself, to say that it's possible that as horrendous as the presidential election results are, and the It's not about one person, it's about entire squads of people who are getting ready to move into the top of the executive branch, that there are some potential silver linings, and the beat is on potential, that much of what might turn out to be silver linings, of course, has to do with how we proceed. In the spring, I spent a few weeks in Germany, in the southwestern part of the country, and every day I would get up and read Stars and Stripes next to the Ramstein Air Base. And Stars and Stripes was filled with the news of record shipments of ammunition to U.S. military depots, filled with the news of exercises and maneuvers, filled with the rhetoric of the need to confront Russian expansionism, quote unquote. And from talking to a lot of activists in Germany, they were very fearful about the prospective election of Hillary Clinton. Domestically, I don't think there's any question that, for instance, if we watch the Democratic and Republican conventions, there's a whole different constellation of ethics and worldviews operative there in the constituencies. And so it's tragic that the Democratic ticket lost the election on Tuesday. The results we know are an affirmation of what we've spent a lot of our lives trying to roll back, the hatred and the bigotry and the narrow-mindedness and the glory and ignorance. Was it Will Rogers or Mark Twain said, it's not what people don't know that bothers me, it's what they know that just ain't so. You know, the Democratic Party at the top 8 years ago gave hope a bad name, and the Republican Party gave faith a bad name. But we still need faith. Okay, so we know that we suffered, humanity suffered a huge loss on Tuesday because of what is being empowered from the top down in terms of domestic policy. At the same time, the neoconservative positions and the archangels, if you will, of the neoconservative ideology, the top people like Robert Kagan, they were adamant that it was important, essential to elect Hillary Clinton president. A so-called no-fly zone, which is a good euphemism for going to war, under the responsibility to protect ethos R2P. The scenario to do in Syria what was done in Libya under the guise of a no-fly zone, Hillary Clinton was committed to that. She, under the guise and the rhetoric of liberal interventionism, was all geared up to further intervene by any other name with regime change. And I think that clock was just set wrong. It was set dangerously. It was a course of action that, if we were to extrapolate from it, could bring not only escalation of war, but in the context of, again, what I was reading about in Germany and Stars and Stripes, confrontation with Russia and quite possible pushing the envelope towards military confrontation, which could include nuclear weapons confrontation. So we've got that is not in place, that particular set of people, that way in which the clock wasn't reset, was just set. It was set, if anything, to make Barack Obama seemed like a paragon of military restraint. What about Donald Trump? Well, sometimes he says all kinds of things, sometimes. And we used to say about Patrick Buchanan that even a broken clock is correct twice every 24 hours. With Donald Trump, I tend to say that a clock that is spinning backwards, I don't know how often that's correct, but I'm sure it is sometimes. Of course, that MO and that mentality with Trump and his entourage is enveloped in extreme nationalism and, you know, proud ignorance of the world. But still in all, there are news reports that Trump is indicating he might end military shipments into Syria. There are indications that rather than escalating confrontations with Russia, something else might be brewing in an opposite direction. And so if there is any silver lining to be created, it certainly falls upon us to say that confrontation with the biggest other nuclear power on the planet has to be prevented, and that the madness of militarism is something that perhaps can be eroded a bit. Of course, if we do our work correctly, if we do the underlying work at all different levels that's needed, and I think that's certainly the challenge for us, because we easily get overwhelmed. You know, we all, I mean, just hearing people around the room, and we heard from people at different tables, organizations are doing such vital work, and diverse even there. Even if we say it's in the same general area, there's so many challenges that we face. So when we consider the magnitude of the problems that we face and the next generations after we're no longer walking around on the planet, and the two biggest threats to humanity and the planet, nuclear war and climate change, we can easily, of course, we feel overwhelmed, we feel powerless. And as I was referring to, I think with most people feeling powerless, it's like, why bother? It's like, you know, we say we're going to change the world for the better. It sounds like, oh, we're going to change the weather. You know, that doesn't sound real. And yet, if we can, by example, by communication, by organizing, bring to the fore a kind of an excitement and a vision that it's possible to be engaged in a process, not a result, but it's really, aren't we always most involved in process that really matters? It's a process. We're not getting somewhere, per se. It's not a destination that we stand there. It's always a process. Community as a verb, peace perhaps as a verb, some way to move forward together, that we could impart that. We can incubate it. We can impart that. The social movement. So who could have expected the Occupy movement before it came to the fore? Who could have expected Black Lives Matter movement? Who could have expected the Bernie Sanders for president effort before it happened? And yet, that cross-pollination, we know happens. That's not necessarily mystical, but it's certainly not logical. You know, if there's one thing you could set your watch by in the last few years, is the pundits on TV, you know, they're doing much worse than a coin flip. If they tell you what's going to happen, the chances that it's wrong are just much better than it's right, just in terms of their political prognostications, whether for good or for ill. And I think that's part of what the knowledge or, you know, and our best wisdom that we have that we need to keep building on in this very difficult period ahead. I think this period, the next few years, might in some ways be reminiscent of the McCarthy era, but instead of the boogeyman being the commies, it may well be the terrorists. There's a recommendation from Newt Gingrich to reestablish the HUAC, the House on American Activities Committee, but this time it would be the Islamic threat that would be targeted. So clearly it's going to be very difficult for us, and yet we have a lot of resources. The internet and the barriers to entry for sizable mass communication didn't obviously exist several decades ago. Look at how well we're using the internet. Not as well as we would like to, but our capacity to communicate with each other and to inspire, as Bernie talked about, the demographics are on our side. The young people who voted overwhelmingly for Bernie in the primaries, the young people who have a positive view of democratic socialism and see how destructive unrestrained capitalism has been in terms of the planet, in terms of labor rights and human rights and environment and possibilities to create a better future. So here we are. And a lot of times, I believe, we are encouraged to get into an either-or framework. Either you do electoral work or you don't. Either you're out marching in the streets or you're doing independent media. And to me, that's kind of like saying that to have a strong forest, you just need to have one or two things, you know. Let's just have a lot of trees in the forest. Let's have just a lot of underbrush. And we know that any healthy forest has a tremendous amount of ecological diversity, and I believe that's what social movements are about. And understandably, we each get passionate about the particular part of the garden, if you will, that we're working. But if we can be more encouraging, accepting, and nurturing of people to have a wide diversity of activities, all moving hopefully with synergy together, I think that's very important. We, at this time, I believe, more than ever, need to move away from a sectarian view of politics. We move away from the understandable temptation that we're doing it the right way, and other people are doing it the wrong way, and that we are the ones who are, you know, the light onto the world. And at the risk of offending, let me contrast two different incarnations of Green Party work. In Richmond, California, as you may have heard, Melvin Willis and Ben Choi were just elected to the Richmond City Council. And so, again and again, including last Tuesday, the Richmond Progressive Alliance and the approach of grassroots organizing prevailed, and up against tremendous forces, essentially with less overt opposition from Chevron this time, defeating Chevron. You know, who would have thought? It isn't the conventional wisdom that that can be done. And there was, and I love that word, ecumenical. Here we are, and by the way, thank you to the Ecumenical Peace Institute for bringing us here. In a politically ecumenical way, people in Richmond, so many, hundreds and hundreds of people, that we have a capacity not to restrain ourselves, not our vehemence, not our determination, not our anger, if you will, or our radicalism of getting to the roots of problems, but we are determined to work together in an open, ecumenical, accepting, embracing way for a wide range of people and perspectives. If you're in the Green Party, if you're the Democratic Party, if you're a Libertarian Party, if you're declined to state, there's no sort of message that, well, you're sort of not quite as pure, you're one of those choice of evils people, you know, all this sort of negative, hair-splitting, circular firing squad sort of thing. You know, how many pure leftists can sit on the head of a pin? You know, there just has not been that. And you see some of the results that are not only measured by the election tabulations on a Tuesday night, but because people are finding ways to build, if you will, community, build organizations, which we all have to do. I mean, if that's one of the messages of last Tuesday, it's that progressives of any description, we need to give money and time and resources and spread the word about organizations that already exist that need to be much stronger. Everybody who spoke up here today from their organization, those groups need to be supported more than ever. And so that ethos, that approach, which is incubated over many years in Richmond, is being manifested in who is in charge of the city of Richmond, the government of Richmond. And it's not just those several individuals who are majority on the city council. It's that more and more it's people there who are valued. Thank you. People who are valued, and it gets to be a spiral, a transcendent spiral upward instead of the usual downward spiral of money and cynicism. And then there's the approach of building a roof without a foundation, which is to say the every 4 years Green Party campaign. We got 0.47% 1 year, we got 1.0% this year. We keep working on the roof and there's no foundation. And then we'll tell other people that they're not pure enough because they're going to do a choice of evils. And that means that you just are not with it. I don't know about you, but I put gasoline in my car. I consider that an evil. But I actually did it today from driving from Marin County. I considered it superior to the evil of walking over the Richmond Bridge to get here in time. And that was a choice of evil. We all know candidly that every day of our lives, or at least on a regular basis, we choose between what we might consider evils. We don't get to determine the objective conditions through which we live. And I hope that as we face this threat, as we hope that we're not going to look back on the Obama era as some kind of Weimar Republic, that we'll see that we cannot afford the luxury of sectarianism among people of goodwill who are trying to protect the planet's ecological system, that are trying to prevent the slaughter, the organized killing of war on massive scales, the racism, the economic inequities, the deprivations of health care that Martin Luther King said was as egregious as any evil he could think of, is denying people equitable access to health care. And I'm not daring to be optimistic. I thought of just to be cheerful with you, I've already talked about Bonhoeffer. I'll talk about Antonio Gramsci in prison under Mussolini. And some of us are going to prison, even if we don't want to, if we don't give up. I just take that as a given. But in the case of Antonio Gramsci, he lived under out-and-out fascism. And he said that a challenge of modernity is to live without illusions, without being illusioned, without being disillusioned. And, you know, that's a bit of a puzzle. How can we live without illusions without being disillusioned? I suppose, and maybe something's lost in translation, I don't know Italian, but the reality is that we're constantly having that challenge, right? To not be scammed and conned by the flowery rhetoric of the Jerry Browns and the Barack Obamas, much less the Donald Trumps. At the same time, not to become cynical. Cynical's a death knell for getting anything done. Cynical's a death knell for creating some kind of future that we'd want the next generations to live. And so I'm hopeful that in this time, a tremendous crisis, that we can pull together more effectively without illusions. And even though it's very downbeat, if we look at where we are without illusions, I think it's very, very grim. And it's such a challenge and opportunity to not let that immobilize us. Is it better to have illusions about where we are and not be so downbeat? Or is it better to be realistic and be dragged down? Well, we don't want to be dragged down. I'm thinking louder, obviously. But I think if we have our feet firmly on the ground and we are realistic about what we're up against, then we can organize together. I think that is the lesson of all the effective social movements of recent years and decades. One of the areas that, of course, I've worked on, and many people in the room have worked on for decades, has to do with perpetual war. And the way in which, and there's no better phrase, I think, than what King called the madness of militarism, the way in which militarism has seeped into and permeated our entire society, everywhere we turn, that it has become normalized, that it's become accepted, and not only accepted, but so widely embraced and glorified, whether in sporting events or anything else, and the the honoring of the fallen. Let me even give an example of Mr. Khan, and who was so unfairly vilified by Donald Trump. His son died in a war in Iraq, and time and again we were told that he had proven his patriotism by going out to kill in Iraq and made the ultimate sacrifice. The candidate who kept telling us that kept saying that Donald Trump was against Muslims, unlike her. Can you think of anyone who, with the possible exception of George W. Bush and Barack Obama, has done more to, on an organized basis, kill Muslims than Hillary Clinton, who voted for the Iraq War and then as Secretary of State for 4 years, pushed the so-called no-fly zone, the intervention in Libya, and which led to the festering in, of ISIS and so forth. I mean, things, the militarism is so deep that these sort of superficial arguments hold sway. And underneath it, we have what George Wald, back in 1969, the Nobel-winning biologist, said, we have a culture of death. The government, our government, is in the business of death. It was true in 1969, it's true today. And, of course, we have this continuous challenge of how to come to terms with that and communicate it to our population and organize on a realistic basis without seeming like we are lunatics. It's really hard to talk with people if they think you're a lunatic, I've noticed, at least to do it in a persuasive way. And yet, you know, we have that opportunity to try to break through some of the superficial, some of the propaganda spin and so forth. I want to just close before, and I think we have some time for discussion, questions and so forth, to say a little bit more about my own particular experience at the Ramstein Air Base in Germany. One of the reasons I was interested in going there and writing about it, and I wrote a piece that you could find online at thenation.com. It's called The Most, I didn't write the headline, but it's The Most Important U.S. Air Base You Never Heard Of. It's really a switchboard for the so-called War on Terror, the Ramstein Air Base. It's huge. It has more U.S. airmen, and that's the official name, than every other U.S. military base in the world, except just barely Lackland in Texas. And it's there that the center of all the fiber optic cable and so forth is such that you have the drone signals coming off the satellites, and a satellite from Afghanistan and elsewhere, being beamed down to Ramstein, and then by fiber optic cable being sent to Nevada, where the pilots and sensors, drone operators, do their targeted assassination killing. And the ethos around the Ramstein Air Base, and I was able to tour it for a few hours, is one of total normality. There is what used to be called a PX and now an exchange. I've never been in a shopping mall that big. It's the biggest military exchange of the U.S. in the world. Is just massive. There are bowling alleys, there are golf courses, there are the churches and the synagogues and the mosques. There is, as they call it, Little America, very proudly. And some of the orientation material says, you know, you might worry that you're going to be leaving your home in the United States, but don't worry, because we've brought our way of life to here in Little America in Southwest Germany. And indeed, the Pentagon has done that. 57,000 Americans living in a small space there. And it is very normal. And to me, that was ultimately, after going on the C-130Js that are sending paratroopers and dropping them into Africa, countries we don't even know what the U.S. is doing, pushing RVs and Humvees and armored tanks out the back of the plane in countries we don't know about, and the Air and Space Center that's relaying the drone activities, and the NATO headquartered synapses there that are very involved in the confrontations with Russia, and all the rest of this massive Ramstein Air Base. The takeaway for me ultimately was how normal it is, how very normal it is, and that in little America, there is no thought that I could discern with interviews and discussions to what happens when a Reaper drone is fired and a village is terrorized, not only when it's fired, but just by it hovering overhead, whether in Somalia or Yemen or Syria or Iraq or Afghanistan. No thought whatsoever about that because it is so normal. And when I went to Syracuse, it also was a very similar nonchalance. It's so normalized. And so what I encountered in Little America in Southwest Germany is equally true in Big America here in the United States. And we're left with that very awful reality, and we're left with the possibility of hope. You know, Howard Zinn used to say that when you least expect it, you think everything's just going down the tubes. And then because of what people are doing, because how people are organizing, because people are determined and called forward and bring into fruition our best aspects as human beings, some wonderful things can happen that change history for the better and make the world more nurturing of life rather than destructive of it. So we still get to have some hope. Thank you for being here.